I'm Daphne Wollstonecraft, and you're listening to Night Watch, a show of terrifyingly true stories. If you'd like your story told on the show, email it to watcher@nightwatchpod.com. Hello, Night Watchers. If you're listening to this, that means that you purchased Night Watcher, which is my debut thriller novel. Thank you so much for doing that. It means the world. Actually, this show, Night Watch, was started because I wrote Night Watcher and I named the show after the show in the book. So this has been in the works for a while and I miss doing this show so much and I hope to bring it back in the future. But for now, I have three terrifyingly true kind of stalking stories for you guys today that are geared more towards the themes of my debut thriller novel, Night Watcher, and the hiding man who is the masked serial killer in the book. Instead of making it more so how Nola does, her show Night Watch is all about paranormal encounters and things like that, but I wanted to give you guys all the stalking, creepy stories before you read the book. I think that's more on par with our Night Watch, right? So let's get spooky. This first story I have for you today is called The Night Shift. It was posted by u/shortstackannie, of course, with her permission. I've worked at the diner off Route 1 for the last 8 years. I won't tell you the name for privacy reasons, but let's just say everyone calls it the diner anyway, as we're the only one like it in town. It's the kind of place you don't think still exists until you see it in person. Checkered black and white floor, bubblegum pink vinyl booths with cracked seams, heavy porcelain mugs that always smell faintly of burned coffee. There's wood paneling on the walls, worn smooth from decades of elbows and leaning arms, and the whole place carries the scent of fryer grease, layered under lemon-scented disinfectant and hot metal. We open at 5 a.m. sharp and close when the night shift says so. The haddock chowder is always on special in the afternoons, and the blueberry pie, made fresh every other day by the owner's cousin Marlene, is sold all day, every day, year-round. Locals swear by it. Tourists find us when their phones die and they need a place to sit and warm up, but they always love it. I work the late shift, 6 in the morning until midnight, give or take, sometimes longer if the weather goes bad or if the cook disappears for a smoke and doesn't come back. I like it mostly. It's quiet, peaceful in a way. Just the low hum of the fridge, the occasional clink of a spoon against ceramic, and the soft ding of the bell above the door when someone walks in. That's my routine. Then there's Cal. He's been coming in for months. Always wears the same faded green field jacket and a Red Sox cap that looks like it hasn't been washed since the Clinton administration. The first time he walked in, he headed straight to booth 6, the one right near the front window that gets just a sliver of the Atlantic Ocean view if you sit at the right angle. He ordered a black coffee and a slice of blueberry pie, no whipped cream. "Too sweet that way," I remember him saying in a cunning tone with a wink. He paid in cash, left exactly $1 tip on the table. Whatever, I thought. His presence certainly wasn't odd to me in general. We get plenty of solo diners, especially in the off-season. I mean, it's a coastal Maine town in winter. People come and go. He seemed like a harmless regular who wanted a little pick-me-up. But then, Cale started showing up more often. That's the reason I even know his name, because he eventually told me and asked for mine in return. At first, he came in every few days, and then he started coming in every night, or at least every night I was in, which is 5 steady nights a week. I don't know if he ever stopped in for breakfast or lunch, as I only ever saw him after 10 for pie and coffee. Always in booth 6. He wanted to know my name at first, like I just said, but then he seemed to get more comfortable with probing more personal questions. "You live around here?" he said once, stirring his coffee. "This your usual shift? What's a girl like you doing here this late?" I'd brush it off, keep it light, thought he was just making friendly conversation at first. I told him I liked the hours, that I had bills to pay, that I wasn't much of a morning person anyway. But it kept going. One night, he asked me if I walked home or if I had a car. I had previously told him that I did live in town, which was true, but I didn't say where in town. But I realized quickly this was a mistake because I did indeed walk to and from work. I live in an apartment only a couple blocks up the hillside, but I lied and told him that I do drive and that I drive to work. Then he asked if I lived alone. I do, but I told him I had a roommate. I should have said boyfriend or husband or something and not give this guy the idea that I live with another young woman or something, but I couldn't think quickly enough. There was something about his tone that gave me the chills. It didn't feel friendly or normal. It felt like he was prying and maybe hiding a secret. I don't know how to describe this, but it was almost like he already knew the answers and was testing what I'd say, because when I lied, he'd raise his eyebrows and the corners of his mouth would turn up a bit, as though he was saying, "Okay, sure." That same night, after I locked up and walked down the side steps behind the kitchen, which was a couple hours after Cal paid and left, I saw a car parked across the street. A beat-up blue sedan with its lights off and someone clearly sitting in the front seat. I pretended not to notice and walked fast up the hill, cursing myself as I did that I was walking towards my apartment, but I didn't know where else to go. I did take a slightly different route than usual by cutting behind a seafood shack, slipping through the alley, and only looking back once before turning the corner completely, noticing then that the headlights were on. But I didn't care anymore because by then, I was out of sight and running like hell to my apartment along the dark, barren streets. When I got home, I locked the door and sat on the couch with the lights off, listening to the fridge hum and trying to tell myself I was overreacting, that it could have been anybody, and that just because Cal had asked me some questions that night didn't mean it was him waiting for me. And nothing happened that night anyway, so I just let it go and I went to sleep. You need a code or a key to get up to my unit anyway, and I have amazing neighbors, so I felt safe. The next night, Cal came in as usual, sitting at what was quickly becoming his booth. I took his order for a usual slice of pie and bottomless coffee with a smile like he didn't make me uneasy. And then casually, he said, "You weren't limping before. Twist your ankle or something?" I couldn't help but twist my eyebrows up because I hadn't limped, so I just kind of laughed it off and said, "Don't worry about me." I don't know why I didn't deny it, it just felt like such a weird thing to say. I poured his coffee and walked behind the counter again, getting caught up with a small group of teenagers at a different table, but I couldn't help but notice that Cal stayed longer that night, and he didn't even touch his pie. He just sat there, eyes following me wherever I went. Around 11:30, the place emptied out, except Cal. The cook had clocked out, but not before asking me if I'd be okay with that man sitting at the booth, because I told him earlier in the shift about him, but I didn't know what to do, like make him wait nearly an hour while I closed up and cleaned. I'm way too much of a people pleaser for that, even though all I wanted to do was ask if he'd sit with me. I said I was okay and immediately regretted it when the cook left. There was one other customer in the diner, a younger couple, so I essentially just prayed that Cal would leave before them and busied myself again with wiping down the counter. Soon after, the couple left, and I overflowed with dread. I went back to the big sink in the kitchen and soaked the coffee pots and dishes that the couples used before returning to the counter, where I first noticed Cal was no longer in his booth. But then I looked to my left, which was my blind spot when I emerged from the kitchen, to see him standing there behind the counter. It spooked me so much that I jumped, yelped, and slipped, falling onto the floor, which got a smile out of him. He reached to help me up, but I scurried backwards and stood on my own, realizing quickly that my ankle was throbbing. "You sure your ankle's okay?" he asked. And then I got so freaked out remembering that earlier in the evening, he asked me about my limp and now suddenly I had one. So with confidence this time, I held onto the counter and I said, "You can't be back here." He didn't move at first, but then he stepped forward, holding something in his hand. He softly said something like, "You dropped your glove last night," before putting it down on the counter like it was a peace offering. "Thought you might want it back." It was one of my gloves. I could tell right away because of the red stitching around the rest of the solid black fabric. But I hadn't noticed it was missing. I was actually wearing them when I left the diner the previous night because it was freezing outside, and I know I walked into my apartment with them because I would have definitely noticed if one of my hands was frozen while I walked. So how did he get it? Well, I asked him, and instead of responding, he said something like, "You should be more careful. Someone could follow you, you know." I told him we were closing up and the kitchen staff needed to go home since he had no way of knowing I was the only person there and that it was time for him to go. I even grabbed the phone to call the police in case he gave me trouble. But when I did that, his face fell, almost like he was disappointed. And he said, "I was just trying to keep you safe. You don't know what kind of people are out there." And it freaked me out because I didn't know if he was talking about himself, if he knew somebody else was following me. I had no idea what he meant. All I knew is that I was scared. And then he walked out quietly, no rush, like he had all the time in the world. I actually did call the cops because I was afraid to walk home alone that night, and now I did have a sore ankle, and I felt like I could be in real danger, but it took them over 30 minutes to arrive from the next town over. I told the officer what happened, and when he drove me home, I didn't see that blue sedan or Cal anywhere. But the next morning, I went into the diner, which was busy as ever on a Saturday, heading straight for the office to get the security footage. My plan was to print out a good image of Cal and give it to the staff and my manager so he couldn't be let in anymore. I also wanted to give one to the police since I didn't have his last name. At the very least, they'd have his photo in the report I made. I also checked the outside of the camera to see if it was him in the blue sedan, but I couldn't find any proof of it. In fact, the last night I saw him, the night I'm talking about, Cale didn't even drive up. He walked from the woods across the road. And when he left that night, he did the same, just walked off into the dark. That was 3 weeks ago, and I haven't seen him since. I'm just hoping that he hasn't seen me. This next story was posted by Overnight Granola, again with her permission, and it's titled, "I went on a solo backpacking trip to reset my life. Someone was out there with me." Okay, so I know how this is going to sound, like one of those posts where some girl goes off into the woods to find herself and ends up hallucinating a bear with human eyes or whatever, but I promise this actually happened. I'm not dramatic. If anything, I'm the person who rolls her eyes at posts like this. So, some context. I had just gotten out of a bad situationship, I won't bore you, and decided to do something that felt brave. Something Instagram-worthy but low-key. Something with pine needles and emotional clarity. So I picked this solo hike in the Pacific Northwest that I had booked like a year ago. Not super long, 5 days, a big loop through Willamette National Forest. I figured, okay, trees, silent, no dudes, that's peace, right? I trained a little and bought the gear. I also watched way too many "Here's How to Shit in the Woods" videos because that's how inexperienced I was. I was nervous but hyped. The first day was fine. I started at this official trailhead. I did about 10 miles. And pitched a tent next to a stream that looked like it had been filtered through God's Brita. It was gorgeous. I had this freeze-dried veggie risotto and felt competent, dare I say, a little like a warrior woman. Day two, still great. I didn't see anyone, which was the point. The trail split, and I took the more primitive branch. Not closed, just a little less popular. It was overgrown and quiet and honestly kind of cool. Like walking through a moss-covered time capsule. I made camp early and got in my tent with my Kindle and felt smugly disconnected. I almost started a new thriller novel, but decided that that would not be wise and opted to read a juicy new cowboy romance set in the West. Hey, I didn't say I was swearing off boys altogether, so don't judge me. I just wanted to feel cozy and not so alone. And I did for a while. Things were going great. I still felt confident. I still felt at peace. But that night is when things started to shift. Around 2 a.m., I woke up needing to pee, which I dreaded having to do in the night because of how damn dark it was. But I didn't get a go-girl that could leak into a Nalgene bottle or something. That felt too weird. So I grabbed my headlamp, got out, and went maybe 10 feet into the brush. It's not like anyone was around to see me because nobody was camped nearby. Remember, I didn't see anybody else on the trail. Everything was still in the woods, almost too still. No rustling, no bugs, just quiet. I was about to head back when I heard this sound from the other direction, not from my camp, but farther out. A kind of slow crunching, like someone carefully walking, trying not to be heard. I froze so deeply that I couldn't even pee, even though I had to go so bad. My entire body failed me. I didn't even scurry back to my tent. My light was off, so I crouched and waited. I figured, it's definitely an animal. Maybe a deer? Please let it be a deer. But it kept moving, and then it stopped. Then I heard breathing. Not like snorting or sniffing, just slow, even breathing. And it was human. I knew it even by their steps. There were one at a time, not two at a time like an animal. I turned my light on so fast and whipped it toward the sound. But I didn't see anything but fir trees. I waited 30 seconds and didn't hear anything, so in petrified terror, I peed as fast as I could and booked it back to my tent and zipped myself in like that was gonna stop anything. Every snap of a twig had my heart pounding. I even set off my bear bell accidentally. In the morning, I thought maybe it was just nerves or an elk, you know, something explainable. I packed up and kept hiking, telling myself I was being a baby. But day three, I started seeing weird stuff. The trail turned rough, barely even a trail really, but what caught my eye was this little clearing where someone recently had made a pile of sticks and bark, stacked carefully like a campfire, but with no sign of burning. Just a weird little structure. And in the middle was a twist of hair tied with thread. I told myself maybe it was some nature art thing, but it felt off, like some Blair Witch shit. I really should have taken a photo, but I had this creepy haunted feeling and I just got the hell out of there instead. At this point, I honestly just wanted to stop, but I was too far in the woods to turn around before dark. So I set up camp in a kind of hodgepodged way and zipped myself inside. I woke up hours later to the soft rustling of leaves just as the first light of dawn began to bleed through my tent walls. For a second, I thought it was just the wind, but then I peeked through the zipper and I saw him. A man standing outside my tent, looking at me. He was tall, maybe in his 40s, wearing a dirty hoodie and jeans. His eyes locked on mine through the mesh screen, wide, startled, like I caught him in the act. He wasn't hiking, he wasn't camping, he was watching me. Without even thinking, I reached for the pink pepper spray keychain clipped to my sleeping bag zipper, and I didn't even finish unzipping the tent. I just stuck my arm out and sprayed right at his face. He screamed this low, guttural sound and stumbled back, clutching at his eyes. And then he ran. No words, just turned and sprinted down the hill like something out of a nightmare. I didn't even pack up. I just grabbed my phone, grabbed my bag, and went tearing down the mountain path in muddy Crocs, branches whipping at my face, heart pounding out of my chest. I made it to my car shaking and crying, and when I called the cops, my hands would not stop trembling. I don't know how long he'd been following me, maybe since the day before, maybe longer, but if you're a woman thinking about camping alone, don't. Or at least, don't let your guard down for a second. I thought I was being brave, independent, adventurous even. but he seemed to know I was alone, and he thought I was easy. This next one was submitted a while back to me by a listener named Eric. So thank you, Eric. And he titles this one, "The Person in My Backyard." I don't believe in the supernatural. I don't watch horror movies, and I've never been one to dwell on coincidences, but I'm writing this down because I don't know what else to do. I live in the suburbs, and not the cute kind with families and tree swings. I mean the mid-2000s cookie-cutter houses built around dead malls and cul-de-sacs. The kind of neighborhood where people still have their plastic skeletons in their yard 3 months after Halloween because they forgot they're there. It's mostly quiet and filled with commuters and divorced dads, not to mention one guy on my street who power washes his driveway every Sunday like it's a religion. I moved here 2 years ago after my brother suddenly died because he left me the house. It shocked me too that he even had a will because he was sick for such a short amount of time, but that's not relevant here. All that matters is that I've been in this house for a while now, which was hard at first, but it makes me feel closer to my big bro. Anyways, I work remote, tech support for a finance company, and I don't talk to many people on the regular, except when I game with buddies at night or venture into public to catch a movie or something. The first time I noticed anything strange was a few months ago, around mid-December. I remember that because I had a meeting that ran insanely late and I didn't log off until after 9. And I was pissed about this because it meant I missed a friend's holiday party that I was already going to be very late to. So suddenly planless, I heated up some lasagna leftovers in the microwave and walked past the sliding glass door that leads to my backyard. That's when I saw someone standing at the edge of my yard. They weren't moving even after I clearly spotted them. They were standing right where the light from the house stopped and the darkness began, but still, I could see them. It looked like a person in a hoodie, tall, maybe 6 feet, but I couldn't make out a face, mostly just a shape. I thought maybe it was a neighbor or a teenager messing around, so I opened the door, stuck my head out, and said something like, "Hey, you're on my property." I tried to make my voice sound as masculine as I could to prove that I meant business and that they didn't want to mess with me. But they didn't respond or even react. The weirdest part is that, wondering if it was past the quiet hour yet, 10 o'clock, I looked down at my watch as quickly as I could so as not to take my eyes away from them too long. But when I looked back 1 second later, the person was gone. And the clock showed that it was exactly 10 o'clock. Fearing them now even more that they were out of sight, I slid the door closed, locked it and all the other doors in my house, closed the curtains, and told myself it was a harmless person who was lost. I know, lost in your backyard, you're probably thinking. But I didn't know what the hell to think, and then nothing happened, and the week carried on like normal. Until it happened again a few days later. Same time, same spot. Except this time, I didn't go outside, I didn't acknowledge them, didn't open the door. Instead, I turned off my kitchen lights, stepped to the side of the window, and just watched. After maybe 5 minutes, the shape slowly stepped backward into the dark. It didn't turn around, it just backed away, like it knew I was watching, even though I was in the darkness myself on the other side of the window. I wish I could say that was the end of it, that it stopped, but no. That was just the beginning. Now it happens almost every night. Always between 9 and 10 p.m. Always just outside the reach of the porch light. Sometimes it moves closer, other times it just stands there. A tall, silent figure watching me through the glass. After it happened 3 times, I finally called the police, but by the time they arrived, they didn't find anything or a trace of anyone and told me to try and take a video or picture or call them back if it happens again. That actually made me feel a little better, but I'm never able to capture it on camera because of the darkness. It's like my camera can't pick it up because it's in the shadow. So after 3 weeks of this happening, I finally just ordered a Ring doorbell camera, and I'm hoping it'll catch it with night mode. But it won't be here for another 2 days. Last week, I mentioned it to my neighbor, Kevin, the pressure washer guy. He gave me this weird look and said, "Oh, you got a window visitor too?" Like it was nothing, like it was a normal occurrence on our quiet street. When I asked him what he meant, he just shrugged and said, "Some nights I hear someone walking on my patio. I don't check anymore. Doesn't help." That was all he said. I started making rules for myself, little routines to make me feel safe. I called them the rear window rules. Yeah, like the Hitchcock movie, sue me. 1, curtains closed by 8:30 every night, no exceptions. 2, don't go into the backyard after dark. 3, don't look directly at the window after 9 p.m. 4, if you do look, don't acknowledge what you see. 5, never, ever open the door if you see it. These rules have helped for a little while, gave me a little bit of a sense of control. I even started sleeping better until last Thursday. That's when it knocked. Just 3 knocks, slow and deliberate. Like it was gladly waiting for me. Obviously, I didn't answer. But when I opened the curtain the next morning, there was a handprint on the glass. Long fingers that were too fucking long to be a person. I get how that sounds, but it's the truth. That's when I realized it doesn't want to be seen. It wants to be let in. I can't help but wonder if my brother saw any of this when he was still alive. And don't even get my anxiety brain started about this thing being involved in his death. Because I'll tell you right now, he struggled with various health issues for a very long time. His death, although it was sudden, was perfectly reasonable. Although I do think he was way too young to die, but sometimes that's just life's fucked up hand. I'll send an update if I can catch this thing on security cameras. I only hope my brother is watching over me and that whatever the hell this thing is, it'll leave me alone. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this episode of Night Watch. Like I said, I would love to bring this back someday. I just had to stop it because it is a very time-consuming yet amazingly fun show to make. And I was almost done writing my book when I started it, and I'm gonna keep writing books because I love writing books. And again, if you're listening to this, that means you bought my book, Night Watcher, and that means the absolute world to me. It's shows like Night Watch that actually made me want to write my book, Night Watcher, in the first place. I always wanted to have a show like this, and when it felt like an impossible thing to bring to the table, I thought the best way to do it was to write about a character who has a show like it. I love the concept of a call-in radio show, so I did more of that angle in the book Night Watcher. Like I said in the beginning, the protagonist in the book, Nola Strait, has a show, Night Watch. But that is a call-in radio show that gets turned into a podcast, put on podcasting platforms after it's all said and done, and she records it live. And basically, the book is about her living her life in Portland, Oregon, working this badass job, when she gets this terrifying on-air call from a local listener who tells her that she thinks there's a ghost in her house. And because Nola's show is geared towards more paranormal, kind of cryptid type stories, this at first feels like a very normal call. But what this woman goes on to describe makes Nola realize that this is not a ghost, but instead a masked serial killer who plagued Portland 20 years earlier and had a very personal effect in Nola's life. So the book really is about her trying to figure out if this serial killer, the hiding man, is back, if it's the same person, if she's just imagining all of this, if it's her anxiety or if it's real. And it is such a fun book. It really reads, in my opinion, like a slasher movie. It's super creepy, super scary. I hope it spooks you. Thank you guys again so much. I will see you on the page, and I will see you over on my other podcast, Going West. As Nola says, stay safe out there.